Underreported story that is very big. I love these. I love these. Elon Musk. You know this guy, Musk? Well, he is the subject of this evening's Talking Points memo. Put his picture up. There he is. He is about to become the second most powerful man in the country next to the president. And that is the subject of this evening's Talking Points memo. So Twitter banned Donald Trump. All right. And banned a whole bunch of other people. Well, Musk apparently doesn't like that. So he's made an offer to buy it. 43 million is the reported billion, I should say. $43 billion reported amount. And it looks like the Twitter board is going to sell the company to him. Wow, right? So Twitter stock is up 4% today. This is good news for a lot of people, bad news for others, and we'll tell you who is doing what. But first, the Twitter facts. So as you know, I use Twitter. We have more than 3 million followers. Part of that's due to Holly the Terror Dog, who's very popular on Twitter. And 330 million human beings on this planet are active Twitter users. 330 million. That's the population of the United States, by the way, but we're talking worldwide here. 6,000 tweets are sent every second. Just boggles the mind, okay? Twitter revenue for the last quarter was $1.6 billion. So you can see what a powerful company this is. Now, Elon Musk is the richest person in the world. He's worth an estimated $219 billion himself. He's 49 years old, born to a South African father, Canadian mother. That was in Pretoria, South Africa. He now lives in Texas. He moved out of California because he was outraged by the government there. But he is not a doctrinaire conservative. All right, he's kind of a libertarian guy, but I'm not sure exactly why he wants Twitter. And that's what we're going to get into. We have a guest and we'll talk about that. But if this comes to be, and I think it will, I mean, the government could step in, but I don't know why the federal government would deny Elon Musk the opportunity to buy the company other than ideology. Because I don't think Musk is going to ban Trump, and that's a big thing. So we're keeping our eye on this story. But the complexity of the social media operation and is so powerful. Again, if Musk gets this, he's the second most powerful man in the country next to the president. Because then he'll be able to regulate what gets out into cyberspace and what does not, as what is happening now. So Donald Trump was dealt a grievous blow, which he's never recovered from, by being banned from Twitter. The problem with Twitter, there are two problems, defamation and verification. So when you have 6,000 tweets a second being launched into cyberspace, you can't real time figure out what's going on. You can't. And there's a lot of defamation. Now, you can sue for defamation based upon a Twitter feed personally. But as I've told you, that costs a lot of money unless your brother or sister is a lawyer. They'll do it for free. And then it takes years and years and years. And then there's free speech and all of that. It's not easy, particularly when you're a famous person. And then you can put out all kinds of falsehoods. Well, who's going to verify this stuff? Who? Now, Twitter itself knows that if Republicans win back Congress in November, there's going to be legislation not only against Twitter, but against all the social media companies to try to stop the ideological censorship that's in play now. That will happen. Biden would probably veto it, but it's going to happen because of the outrage over Trump. Now, there's no question that Donald Trump exaggerates, and he puts out there things that I can't verify sometimes. Doesn't mean they're false. Him saying that, you know, there was election fraud, that's true, there was. Does it rise to the Supreme Court overturning the election? Not at this point. That's the truth. That's the fact. But Trump can't be heard. And others can't be heard as well. People who put things out that the left wingers who run Twitter don't like, they can ice them. And I think that's what Elon Musk will stop. Okay, Biden's got a problem with his vice president, Kamala Harris. Now, Biden hasn't addressed this, but this is a problem. So Kamala is chief of staff, big position. Tina Flournoy quit. And this is the 12th person to resign in 16 months. Wow. Talk about a turnover. Now, I'm not going to speculate. I don't know why Tina is leaving. She's going to be replaced by a woman named Lorraine Valls, who's already on the staff. There's Lorraine. I hope they have a good time. I don't know whether Kamala's mean. I don't know why they're quitting. It's unusual. You get a big White House job, it's unusual to walk in a year or so. But this is becoming an image problem. Kamala is a problem for the Biden administration. And Biden's got his own problems. You know, and I write about them in my new column called Living the Dream on BillO'Reilly.com. I hope you read it. You know, these columns, I think you'll find them worthy. So I hope you go in. All right, let's get back to Elon Musk, who I said twice, and I don't want to be boring and repetitive, as most cable hosts are now. But Elon Musk, man, if he brings this in, he is hugely powerful. Let's bring in Eric Berger. Now, Eric is a senior space editor at Ars Technica in Houston, Texas. He has been in board meetings where Elon Musk was there, and he's obviously Musk going to space and all that, so Eric knows about that. So do you know Musk? Have you had any conversations with him yourself?
Oh, yes. I wrote a book called Liftoff where I interviewed him at length and probably spent the better part of, you know, 20 or 30 hours with him at various points talking to him about spaceflight
and his
philosophy.
Okay, so the book is Liftoff. When was that book published?
It was published about a year ago.
All right, so there it is. There's the cover. We want everybody to check that off. So your assessment of Elon Musk trying to buy Twitter, your assessment, why is he doing it?
Honestly, I think there are several reasons. First of all, he's had a long love affair with Twitter. He uses that service on a daily basis, I think sometimes to blow off steam, and he loves to talk directly to people interested in Tesla and SpaceX. Part of it, too, is I think he feels very strongly about freedom of speech. And for the reasons you mentioned, like, has watched this and has not liked some of the decisions about people who have been taken off the service. And finally, you know, I think maybe he's a little bit bored. He's dueling with the FAA at SpaceX right now to work on his next generation rocket. And Tesla seems to be going pretty well. So I think he may have just been looking for something else to do.
Does he like attention? Does he like to be in the news cycle?
I don't think he chases attention. He likes to get things done, and he's willing to run through roadblocks to get things done through regulatory agencies. And so that just by definition makes news.
Okay. He left California because he didn't like the liberal government there. He went to Texas, a conservative state where you live. Does that indicate he is politically conservative?
I wouldn't say he's politically conservative. He definitely feels like there should be less government intrusion in our lives. The regulatory environment in California really turned him off. And so he came to Texas, which is basically the polar opposite. And he's moved a lot of his rocket and car business here as a result of that.
Socially, I understand he's a liberal man. I should tell the audience, I met him one time. It was at a party in the Hollywood Hills, which I didn't want to go to. But I kind of had to go for business reasons. He was there. I didn't speak to him with any, you know, depth. It was like, hey, how are you? That kind of thing. So I can't say I have a feel for him at all. But I have heard from people who do know him that he's socially liberal. Would that be correct?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. He very much, you know, feels like people ought to be left to live their lives the way that they want to live them.
So that's, but that's a libertarian philosophy rather than a left-wing philosophy. Left-wing is you, it's my way or the highway.
Right. Yeah, I would not say he's left-wing in that sense. He's just sort of socially, liberally, liberal, fiscally conservative, generally speaking.
Okay. Do you agree with me if he gets Twitter, he's the second most powerful man in the country?
He's already extremely powerful, and this would take it to another level. Because let's face it, I mean, he owns a big car company, he owns a big space company, and now he would own the platform used by millions of people, as you said, around the world to speak directly to their audiences. So yes, he I don't know if he'd be the second most powerful, but he would be definitely in the conversation for that.
Well, and nobody else. I mean, I'm good at this kind of stuff, Mr. Berger. There's nobody else that's going to touch him if he gets Twitter. Do you expect him to reinstate Donald Trump and others who have been banned?
You know, I haven't spoken to him directly about that. I will say that I know that he appreciates how Trump used Twitter. I don't think he appreciated all the things that the former president said on Twitter, but he clearly understood that Donald Trump was very good at using Twitter to establish a brand. And so I suspect that probably would happen, but I don't have any firsthand knowledge.
Do you think that Elon Musk will be concerned about verification and defamation, as I laid out? It's so hard, the volume of tweets that go out, it would be so hard to, you know, actually regulate that. Would he care about that at all?
I think he cares about it. You know, Elon is, to him, fairness is a pretty important concept. So if he feels like people are being done wrong, you know, I think there will be some action taken, but how you would undertake that while also having a libertarian approach to your social media platform, I think that remains to be seen.
Yeah, that would be an amazing challenge for any company to do it. Well, I don't have any rooting interest here as far as Elon Musk is concerned, but I want an honest social media in this country. I think it's vital to our Republican democracy to have it. So I'm rooting for Musk to get this, because once he gets it, it's his company. He can do whatever he wants with it. But along with that, it's going to come enormous pressures on him. Enormous. Last word.
I agree with that. But I mean, you look at what he's done with Tesla. He's taken on the entire automotive industry. And with SpaceX, he's taken on the largest defense contractors in the world. And he's been, you know, very successful with those two ventures. Does he have enough room on his plate for this massive social media company? I don't know. But his past track record is pretty good.
All right. Thank you, Eric. I appreciate your time. And again, the book that Eric wrote, put it up on the screen so we can get a look at it. Liftoff, well worth your attention. Police officers in America, not a good time to be a cop. FBI stats just released, 59% increase in police intentionally killed in the line of duty from 2021 to 2020. 73 police officers intentionally killed 2021, 46 2020. Gunfire, the leading cause of the officer's death. 55 of the 73 slain were by a firearm. So far this year, 19 of the 101 officers shot happened in ambush-style attacks. This year, 2022, they're ambushing police. 13 major U.S. cities had homicide records broken. They are Portland, Oregon, St. Paul, Minnesota, Indianapolis, Toledo, Rochester, Philadelphia, Columbus, Baton Rouge, Louisville, Kentucky, Austin, Tucson, Oakland, Albuquerque. Most of those cities run by progressive leftists. Okay. So there's obviously a violent crime problem, and police are in danger in America. So let's bring in Charles Fain Lehman. He is a contributing editor for City Journal, which is an urban policy magazine that I read. It's got very, very good information in City Journal. So what I take from this, Mr. Lehman, is that criminals are now emboldened and are taking more chances, violent criminals, people who want to hurt the police and others. They take more chances now because the odds of them getting caught are lower. Would I be wrong in that assessment? Everything is expensive these days, you know that. The government is printing trillions of dollars in consumer prices higher than ever. If the government continues its printing and spending, the dollar could continue its free fall and lose its coveted role as the world reserve currency. Let's hope that doesn't happen. But there are a few things you can do right now. American Hartford Gold can show you how to protect your money, your retirement, your hard-earned savings against inflation by helping you diversify a portion of your portfolio into physical gold and silver. Start with a short phone call, and they can have physical gold and silver delivered right to your door or put inside your 401k or IRA. So please call or text them right now. Tell them Bill O'Reilly sent you. Call 877-444-GOLD, 877-444-GOLD, or text GOLD to 65532. Again, that's 877-444-GOLD, or text GOLD to 65532.
I think the two things are true. One is, yes, it's correct that there's been an increase in that willingness of criminal offenders to take chances, taking shots at the cops. And you see that in the dramatic increase in ambushes that you alluded to. I can tell you that between 2020 and 2019, there was an 86% increase in ambush assaults on police officers. There's we've returned to mid-1990s levels of ambush assaults on police officers, according to the FBI. And that says to me that it's not just criminals who are going after cops because they get into a tight spot. It's criminals who are saying, here's an opportunity to go after somebody. That's thing one. But thing two is that this increase in violence against police officers is part of a broader increase in homicides, shootings, and other acts of casual violence in our society. When America gets less safe, policing gets less safe. And of course, when policing gets less safe, America gets less safe in sort of a vicious cycle.
Okay, but what you have now is also the police themselves understanding if they go after violent criminals, bad things can happen to them. Not only can they get shot or assaulted by the violent criminal, but even if they make the arrest, they could get in trouble for some kind of, you know, dereliction of duty or violation of policy. And so police tell me, anecdotal, that a lot of times they hang back from the gang shootings and they're shooting each other and almost a, well, let them kill each other type of mentality. Have you heard of that?
Yeah, absolutely. Both in my conversations with police officers, but also I think there is now fairly robust empirical evidence that looks at how high profile media incidents of police use of force and subsequent protests can lead to a withdrawal of police in their exercise of discretionary arrests, discretionary stops. There's actually a lot of fairly robust evidence that A, shows that, and then B, links that to an increase in violence. I think most tellingly, when you just go look at what has happened to assaults and killings of police officers, felonious killings and felonious assaults, they were at their lowest levels in history up through about 2015, which is, of course, when the Ferguson protests and the first round of hostility to the police that becomes the Defund the Police movement takes off. And like clockwork, there's an increase in ambush assaults, sure. An increase in assaults of all kinds.
George Floyd was a fuse. That was the fuse to what we see now. Let's look forward. The problem is in your city, Washington, D.C., in my city, New York, in L.A., in Chicago, in most large cities, the district attorneys are far left. They sympathize with the criminals more than the victims, generally speaking. Philadelphia, Krasner, okay? I don't see how that reverses itself. So the situation of attacks on cops and civilians is going to get worse.
Well, some of it's the district attorneys who are elected. Some of it is In a place like DC, some of it's the city council, sometimes it's mayors. If you look at a place like Chicago, the problem is the DA and the city council and the mayor, and also to some extent the CPD. There are complicated relationships there. But I think in all of those cases, those are often offices which are democratically accountable. I think that there's reason for optimism. The election of Eric Adams in New York City gives me a sense of optimism. There's polling that suggests that Chesa Boudin, the progressive district attorney in San Francisco, is likely facing recall in the coming election cycle. Nobody expected that to happen. Everyone thought that he would skate by, but it seems like there's some pretty bad polls out there for him. So, you know, I think look, the electorate is very aware of how bad crime has gotten. They're very aware that these are actors who are not concerned enough about crime, and eventually they will sit up and take notice, as they did in the 1990s.
I don't know. They reelected Krasner in Philadelphia, and that's a disaster. Last question. Have you heard President Biden discuss this issue at all? Because I know you research this all the time. Have you heard Biden say anything about this?
You know, so I'll say this. I think that the president has been admirably to the right of his party on this issue. He's been willing to say, yes, there's a crime problem. Yes, we should spend money to resolve it. He came out in the State of the Union and said, we want to fund the police, not defund the police. I think that's great. I do wish he would spend less time focusing on gun crime and saying the issue is gun violence. The reality is that most people who carry guns, known guns, aren't committing the crimes. It's a crime problem, a violence problem, not a gun problem. But that said, you know, I think he is one of the most serious actors in the Democratic Party about this issue, to his credit.
Okay. I haven't seen any legislation put forth by his crew that would help local authorities at all. None. But we'll track it. Mr. Lehrman, thanks very much. We appreciate it. All right, one of the states most affected by illegal immigration is Arizona. So the last poll that we could find, so 73% of Arizonans think that this massive illegal immigration is a national security crisis. Okay, only 18% of our Arizonans don't. So that's a colossal thing. Now, as you may know, there is a gubernatorial race in November in Arizona. And one of the people running is Karen Taylor Robeson, who joins us now from Phoenix. So you are locked in a tight race for the Republican nomination, and your primary issues are the economy and inflation. Obviously, that's the biggest one for all Americans. And secondly, immigration. You have put forth a 6-point plan. Now, I'm sorry I'm doing most of the talking, but I'm going to let you do. But I have to set this up because most people don't live in Arizona, although they'd like to, some of them. Okay, first of all,
they're moving here. They're moving here.
Yeah, it's obviously Californians are going, yeah, let me go there. So you want an emergency session of the state legislature? Sure, that's no problem. You want to utilize surveillance technology? I don't think there's a problem with that. You want to enter a multi-state compact with California? That's not going to do you any good. New Mexico, not going to do you any good, but Texas would. But the other 3 points are somewhat controversial. The first one is construct the wall. So as you know, because you're a native Arizonan, most of the land that borders Mexico in Arizona is either federal land or tribal land, Indian reservations, okay? And the state of Arizona is not allowed to do anything on that land unless they get permission from the tribes or the federal government. The federal government is certainly not going to give you permission to build a wall at this point. So what kind of a wall, if you're elected governor, would you build?
Well, Bill, first, thank you for having me and calling attention to the crisis in Arizona, because it's we're really on the front lines of a 50-state border crisis. But we do have state land, we have private land, we have federal land, and we have tribal land. And so my plan calls for us building the wall where we can, which would primarily be state land where we do have jurisdiction, and on private land with willing property owners. But I can tell you, having met with and talked to property owners and ranchers along the border, I believe they would be very willing to have the wall constructed on their property.
And I think you're right. In Pima County, I don't know if the Native Americans would cooperate with you, but I think the private ranchers would certainly like more protection. But you know as well as I do that you build a wall and you'd have to be back off the border because you can't build it on federal land. It'd be back a little bit. that the coyotes, the smugglers, the people and drug smugglers, they're just going to go to a place that doesn't have the wall. So wouldn't that be a waste of money?
No, because where you have a wall, it works. And then it allows you to more efficiently and effectively utilize the limited resources you have, and you can concentrate them in the areas where there is no wall. So, you know, I've seen it. I've seen where it works. And of course, where there's no wall, it doesn't work.
Did you estimate how much wall you could build legally? Do you have an estimation and how much that would cost the state of Arizona?
We have about 20 miles of state land and a significant amount of private land. And I don't have the exact mileage, but I believe that we could cover a lot of territory, and therefore our local law enforcement can be concentrated on the areas where we don't have a wall. And you referenced, part of my plan is to go to the legislature. Fortunately, because we've got, good Republican leadership in the state of Arizona, we have a huge surplus. We have a $5.3 billion surplus right now. So we can and we must find the resources to send down to our local law enforcement in our border counties.
I didn't know that. So that would take care of the funding. Now, the second thing that I want to talk to you about is that part of your plan says surge the National Guard. But as you know, the Posse Comitatus Act prevents the Arizona National Guard or any other state. They cannot detain or deport migrants. They can't arrest them. They can hold them for a certain amount of time until, I guess, local authorities would come, because, again, federal authorities aren't going to help you out. If you're the governor, Ms. Robeson, the federal authorities under Biden, they're not going to help you out at all. You know that.
That's clear. That's very clear. But the National Guard can support and supplement the efforts of our local law enforcement. We do have laws on the books where we can arrest and detain under state law. And I would envision increasing the penalties for some of those and adding additional state statutory authority, such as criminal trespass. We can have trespass laws that if our local law enforcement had the ability and the resources, they can start arresting under state law and detaining under state law.
Sure, you can do that. Texas has done that. You can mm-hmm. pass new laws. They'd be challenged. You know that. Why isn't Ducey's a Republican? Why hasn't he surged the National Guard?
He has sent some National Guard to the border. And he also, just a week ago, I think, entered into a multi-state compact with other governors, because these other governors are realizing that, Arizona, while we're on the front lines, we're passing a lot of drugs through our state into these other states. And in addition to all the national security, the obvious national security implications of an open border policy of Biden, you have to look at the human tragedy that's unfolding with the human smuggling and the sex trafficking and the drugs. Yeah. And the drugs are killing
everybody. Everybody knows it. Everybody knows it. I mean, if you don't know that, then you're just an idiot. And we disqualify you from any kind of a discussion. So everybody knows what a catastrophe this is. And the president and vice president don't seem to care. That's why they're going to get whacked in November. And if you do get the nomination, and I guess the primary is in early August in Arizona, you're going to have a good chance to be governor, because this is going to be a wave, a red wave. The final thing is you want to revoke funding from sanctuary cities. I'm not aware there are any sanctuary cities in Arizona. Is Tucson a sanctuary city?
It is not currently, but I wanted to put every city in this state on notice that when I'm governor, I will use every power of my authority to revoke state funding for any city that chooses to go down that path.
I don't think there are.
And hopefully,
Right.
Yeah. With clarity. Hopefully they won't go down that path.
Okay. Yeah, they're not going to do that. Although Tucson's a very liberal area, as you know, that whole block there in Maricopa County could go either way. And that's the key to your victory or anybody else's victory in Arizona, convincing Maricopa voters, the largest county in the state, that's Phoenix, where you are, to support you. My last question is, do you have any idea why Biden's doing what he's doing on the border? Is there any information that you've gotten? I can't figure it out. It's so self-destructive, not only for him and his party, but for the country.
Well, there's two logical answers. They're either ignorant, stupid, or they know what they're doing. And I don't believe, at that level that they're ignorant or stupid. I believe they know exactly what they're doing.
Do you have any opinion or speculation as to why they want an open border with narcotics and human smuggling attached to it? Why would they want that?
I believe they want these people here to get them on the voter rolls. I mean, when you see cities like New York City allowing non-citizens to vote, I don't know any other logical explanation, but they want to have, you know, these people come in, become members of the Democrat Party and vote for them. And that, you know, just look at Title 42. You referenced Title 42. I mean, it would triple the number of people coming over. The caravans are already lining up on the other side.
Right. Easy.
So, it's
staggering to
my
think.
My likely opponent in the.
Go ahead.
Real quick, my likely opponent in the Democrat nominee for Arizona's governor in November was on record supporting the revocation of Title 42. We went up with a paid advertisement campaign last Friday, and as of yesterday morning, she buckled and backtracked and said no longer is it a good idea. So at least she had the good sense to see the potential ramifications of the revocation of Title 42, but obviously, Biden doesn't understand that. And, you know, you mentioned earlier that he didn't have anything on his schedule today. I would just like to invite him to come to Arizona and witness the disaster that's taking place on our border.
Well, he won't. But we wish you the best, Ms. Robeson. Thanks for taking the time to speak with us today.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This country's having a problem right now, and working people, elderly people, they're getting hammered financially, and we don't know when it's going to end. You know, this fantasy about Joe Biden being removed or not finishing out his term, he's going to finish out his term. So, you know, people throwing that around, there's no basis to it. Maybe something will happen, but not right now. In the meantime, what should we do? And I have a couple of answers for that in this evening's Talking Points memo. First, the facts. Okay, so let's go back to the summer of 2020. And I've told you this story before. I'll truncate it. That word of the day, truncate, that means make it shorter. But it's worth remembering. So 2020. Early August, 3 months before the presidential vote, Trump Biden. I'm sitting on a beach, a beautiful beach on Eastern Long Island, with two friends who are liberals and have always been liberals, okay? And they're chortling about how Biden's going to beat Trump and how they don't like Trump. And I'm going, yeah, but he's done a pretty good job. You know, the economy's vibrant and we don't have a lot of problems around the world right now. And it looks to me like minorities are increasing their wages on average. So what's the beef? They just didn't like him, okay? Because he's flamboyant, because they believe he doesn't tell the truth, and on and on and on and on. Now, I don't get involved in those kinds of discussions. It's not my job to stick up for Donald Trump. I mean, he can stick up for himself. My job is to analyze what is reality. So I looked at them and I said, just listen to me on one thing. You, your children, and your grandchildren are going to get hurt financially if Joe Biden wins the election. Now, that stopped them for maybe 10 seconds. And then they went, oh, no. And I said, you mark my words. You are going to be hurt. Your family is going to suffer financially. And that's what's happened. And I know them very well. So how did I know? Because number one, I knew that Joe Biden didn't have enough mental capacity to understand a complex economy, whereas Donald Trump does. He's a businessman. He knows supply and demand. He knows the marketplace. And Biden doesn't. Number two, I knew that Biden would spend trillions of dollars of government money on far left progressive things. I knew that, and that has come true. And when the government spends trillions of dollars, it has to print more money. Therefore, the dollars that are in circulation lose value, and that's what inflation is. I also knew that Biden would attack the oil industry because he said he would. We're going to wipe them out, according to Biden. And then the unintended consequences of that added to the inflation. So I knew all that. And these people should have known it. They should have known it. But they were blinded by their hatred for Donald Trump. Since April Fool's Day, the Dow Jones is off about 700 points. The NASDAQ is off about 2,000 points. So I'm getting a lot of mail. People are panicking. Don't. If you have a stock that has a profit, you put what they call a stop order on it. If it hits a certain price, you pick the price. It automatically sells. That's what I do. Now, I've lost some stock. However, the cash that I'm raising, I'm going to use to buy other stock at a very low price. Now, I can't give individual financial advice. I can't do it. But my strategy is the stock market correction that we're seeing now may get worse because there's no hope for Biden's economic plan. There's no hope. And I don't know when the bottom is. No one does. But I assume, and may be wrong, that once the fall rolls around, September, the market's going to go, Democrats are going to get wiped out in November, and it will start to come up. That just makes sense to me. But it might not happen. We might go into a severe recession. I don't think we will because Americans are working. There are more jobs than people to do them. Once people are in the marketplace making money, that precludes most recessions. It's the massive layoffs that hit you in that. But American business needs labor. It needs it. And they're paying pretty good salaries. That's the only thing that's going to save us. And Biden has nothing to do with that, by the way. That's a combination of Trump raising the economy up and COVID blasting everything down, and now COVID subsiding, people are coming back. The airlines are the best example. Airlines are going to make money. They're hiring like crazy. You want to work for an airline? Now's the time to apply. Okay. Now, all of this could be wrong. I'm not a macro economist, but I know enough about it, and I know 1,000 times more than Joe Biden does. So therein lies my advice. Now, final thing. If you vote emotionally, if you do anything in your life based on emotion, you're probably going to get hammered in the end. Trump should have won that election. He would have won if COVID didn't hit. But he didn't help himself. He didn't. The bombast should have been brought back in. If he wants to run again, the less bombast, the better chance he has. I've told him that 100 times. He's probably, I know he's tired of hearing about it.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or
prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, final thought of the day. My mantra for more than 25 years is we, that's me and my staff, are looking out for you. Now some people go, you know, they don't buy it. Okay, but I am. And the corporate media is not. Here is the best example. The airline collapse in this country. So we did a search. In the last 3 weeks, you know the JetBlue situation. I've reported on it. Terrible. Forbes magazine, Time magazine, CNBC, Fortune magazine, Washington Post, only media that covered it. And the Boston Globe covered it locally in Beantown because JetBlue is a big base there and it, boom. So just this weekend, JetBlue, 28% canceled or delayed on Friday, 30% on Saturday, 30% on Sunday. That means you have a 1 in 3 chance of not getting where you want to go in a timely fashion. Now, Alaska Airlines also having a lot of trouble. Why don't pilots? Finally admitting it. Now, where's ABC, NBC? Where's Fox News? Where are they? This is a huge story. Millions and millions of Americans are getting hosed. They're suffering. You take your family to the airport, you're sitting there for hours. No pilots. They don't have enough. They tell you it's the weather. It's not the weather. Now, when I blew this story wide open, all of a sudden JetBlue goes, well, we're going to cut back 15% of our flights starting in May 1st. They had to. Because they couldn't get the bleeding flights up in the air. They didn't have anybody to fly the planes. Now, this is a huge story. None of the networks can cover this. Why? Why aren't they covering it? Why? Because the airlines take out advertisements. That's why. Your welfare? And this is across the board. They don't care about you. They've never cared about you. Ever. When I broke the mold and came on cable and said, we're looking out for you and we're going to do our stories about how they affect you, the American citizen, that was brand new. It had never happened before. And then, boom, we're the most successful show for 17 years on cable news. Because people said, yeah, O'Reilly's not in anybody's pocket. And I'm not. And I never will be. But this thing got me. This thing, because I saw it with my own eyes. I experienced it. I'm not going to go over it again. And then I said, where is the coverage on this? There's no denying it's happening. The American airline industry doesn't have enough pilots to fly the planes, yet they're still scheduling all of these flights. And they know they can't get them up. Awful. It's just unbelievable. So I'm happy that we could present news that does look out for you. And I hope that you consider that going forward. And we'll spread the word. Because the more people that watch us, the more powerful we become. Thank you for watching and listening to the No Spin News tonight. And we'll see you tomorrow.